You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in.
Before you get the rest of the story, I'd love to share a quick message from today's sponsor.
Hey, y'all. Just going to take a quick break from this conversation to let you know about the sponsor of today's episode. That sponsor is, well, frankly, it's me. It's Lee Brown University. Look, it's no secret that real estate is crazy competitive, getting more so every day. And when the pie doesn't get any bigger, but the people wanting a piece of it do, you've got to figure out a competitive advantage. And that's why I created Lee Brown University. It's everything you need from soup to nuts, cradle to grave, point A to point B, whatever point B is. Each of you has different goals. So maybe you're a new to the career realtor, or you're a super experienced pro who can't figure out that next level. There's something in my course that's going to help you break through. It's designed for you before I even met you. So enroll in Lee Brown University today. You go to www.leebrownu.com and I'll see you there. Now back to this amazing content.
Hello, friends. I'm Lee Brown. You might have guessed that because here you are at Crazy Shit in Real Estate. Today, we have not one, not two, but three different stories for you because we've got a realtor with the top three hits. You're going to enjoy this. Cricket Stagg is with us today from Lake of the Ozarks. Tune in, enjoy the conversation, check out the show notes, and I'll see you on the other side. So Cricket, tell us a little bit about how long you've been in real estate and give us a little tiny bit of backdrop. How did you land in real estate? Where'd you come from? What's the backstory?
All right. So let's see here. I was in the automobile business at a little tiny car store. It was a new car store. We had five new car brands, and the old man that owned the place decided to sell out to a big conglomerate company. So one of my clients was in real estate, and he said, you know, you should come and look at it because you provide me with fiduciary like I provide others with fiduciary. And of course, I was a car salesman and said, what does that mean? Because I didn't know the word. I just knew how to take care of people like my grandpa, the pastor, told me. You take care of them like you're taking care of your grandmother. So that's where I came into the real estate business. That was 2017. I started at the Lake because it's cutting your teeth the right way. It's a very interesting market. The Lake is owned by Ameren, which is the electric company. So you've got docks that are individually owned by people, but they're private property on the lakefront, and that's public area. So it's an interesting dynamic and septics and all that stuff. So cut my teeth the right way, started with Century 21. I got 2 years in the business and was Lake Board of the Year, or Lake Board Realtor of the Year, Century 21 Realtor of the Year in my office and regionally. And then after 2 years, got my broker's license, and then Kim Zwiener and I started our own thing. She's one of my best friends. Well, I met her in 2017.
It's good to be in business with people that you enjoy. And that's one of the beauties of real estate, is that if you have landed in an office with somebody that's doing just fine, but you don't really enjoy them, you have the opportunity to move, because life's too short to be miserable, wouldn't you say?
Well, when I went into business with C21 in particular, and again, not to pick on them, but that was the company that I worked for, they didn't do anything wrong when I left. But like you said, my plan was to start my own business. And that's what I told the broker when I first started, is I'd like to start my own business. I'd like to make this amount of money. And actually what she said is, there's no way you can make that much money in the first few years in real estate. And I said, well, I'm trying to replace that income. So are you sure? And she said, well, no, go for it. And I, of course, tripled my numbers the first year and second year, third year. I'm proud to say I serviced 38 clients, buyers and sellers first year, 42 the second year, and about 41, 42, I think the third year. I'd started doing referrals and stuff, and I don't count those anymore, right? As a full servicing of your client, you're just referring it out to another state as opposed to doing the whole. Anyway,
well, sorry. For reference, dear listeners, you should know that last year in 2020, the rough estimate is that 70% of the members of the National Association of Realtors, so 70%, did between 0 and 1 transactions. So the vast majority of the realtors out there in the world, if they did any business, probably did 1 transaction or less. So when you hear Cricket say that he's done 38, 42, 46 transactions, that is a very large number, because in real estate space, there's definitely a misconception that all realtors make a lot of money and they're selling everything. But the Pareto principle is more than active in this business, where the Pareto principle would be the 80-20 rule, that 20% do 80% of the business. But I think it's actually far more of a gap than that. And it's more like the top 10% are doing 90% of the business, which is wild, but it's also indicative of the opportunity that real estate has, that you can come into this in 2017 from selling cars and take that skill set, use your listening ears and take care of people the right way. And you can, with hard work, make a successful business. So in 4 years, in many professions, that's a minute. In real estate, that's alternately a minute in 47 lifetimes. But when you go through real estate, you're dealing with people. And that's what changes every single day, which means that in those 4 years and in all those houses you've sold, you encountered something, Cricket, some story that you said, I still to this day can't believe that this happened, that I learned this, saw this, experienced this. So tell my listeners a little story. What crazy shit has Cricket seen in real estate?
Well, I wrote up three different stories just to make sure I didn't write. I just wrote them down. So
you can top kind three?
Of pick. Right. I've got three of them. If I can get through all three of them, I know you've got a certain amount of time here. So the first one that I'll mention is the one that all of the title people that are listening in, anytime I get around a title person and we're having a cocktail and they're like, oh, what's a crazy story? Because for the last 3 years, just, you know, I've watched everything you do. Don't have a crush or anything. You're very knowledgeable and you explain things quite well, like you just did with all of the listeners who I forgot might be listening and not know what an MRP is, that type of thing. So I've been practicing my explaining things. So let's see if I can do this. So I was sitting down in front of the title people and let me back up and explain the seller. I met the seller and we're going to call him John A. I met the seller, his middle initial is important. I met the seller and he said, I got this condo. My father passed away 9 years ago. I had everything deeded to me, correct? All that stuff is the lawyer that I used and all that. We went through that process and I got the listing. I made a mistake. I checked the county paperwork, but when I checked it, I saw that it said John E instead of John A. And I didn't notice that it said John E instead of John A. And that middle initial is a huge difference because his father was John E, which means the property was still deeded in his father's name through some weird happenstance from 9 years ago with a lawyer. Didn't know any of this until the moment we are sitting at title closing. Right. Thank you for bowing your head like that. So we're sitting at title closing and the title girl says, John, if you want to, I'm going to go get the settlement paperwork and all that. And I've got everything signed here. If you want to call me with that social security number, I'll put it on that paperwork and you'll be good to go. And when she walked out the door, I said, John, you don't know your social, you're a grown man. And he said, well, it's not my social, it's my dad's social. It took me just a half a second. And why would you need your dad's social? And he said, well, that was my dad's name. I just signed on all that paperwork. And oh, my stomach sunk. it's your dad's name. Well, yeah, dad's Johnny. I'm John A. Oh, what? So of course the title girl comes in with checks and everything. And I said, just hold on to that. There's a major problem here that I did not know. I just pulled up the county stuff on my little app you can use on your phone for that stuff. And I'm sweating. And I said, I don't know what's going on, but somehow, because of course I had asked him, now you said that you're a lawyer and you said that this and that. Yeah, I did everything. You went to court. I paid him $9,000. Surely it was done, right? So long and short is this is a small town. It was a little tiny town in Missouri. And again, it was a Thursday. So the court was open. We were able to call the lawyer that did all this stuff. He was able to get everything done while the buyers were sitting in the waiting room. We got all the paperwork correctly changed. John A, whatever, signed everything correctly. And if I'm not mistaken, what he had done when he signed, I was told, was either a misdemeanor or a felony. It's a crime to sign somebody else's name in a legal document situation, of course. And it's just a small difference, but it was his deceased father. That's a major difference. And I think it's one of those things that I use to explain the little things that realtors are supposed to do through the process. That's not necessarily my job to look at that paperwork, but it's totally my job to do all of those things. And I could babble about it because, of course, it's something that if you don't do this for a living, you're like, oh, yeah, you just grab a napkin. We'll write this contract. You go to the title company. They're going to take care of it. And no, sir. Again, this is a lot more complex situation than you realize, folks. So that's my first one.
It's also the mark of a professional, though, because while that happened one time, you will not ever let that happen again. So a professional takes a moment of and learns from it to make themselves better at detail spotting in the future. And also, this is a reason to tell people they want to live in small town Missouri, because you can get something fixed. If I'm over here in a big city, I've got a lawyer scrambling for death certificates, and we're going to have to prove this and prove that. And it would be a several days delay and nightmare, but a small town can make things happen. So you get to encourage your future clients, and you're demonstrating that professionals always learn. So what's story number two?
And small disclaimer on that story, you're exactly right, but I still feel like that was a complete miracle. And I told the buyer or the seller at that moment, this is months of problems. I don't know what happened, but we're not going to be able to close. Those buyers are probably going to quit you and all that. And I don't mean to panic, but we've got to figure this out now. So call your lawyer. And again, I never expected that to get finished that day.
And it was also going to church and thank the Lord that this worked out.
Do that for sure. So let's see here. Pick the next story is either an out of area agent who got violent or a seller's disclosure that saved me from a major issue. Which would you like to hear?
Let's totally do violence because that's going to be way more engaging.
Right. So it also involves that MRP designation, the military relocation. One thing that we do as realtors, as you know, we don't serve outside of our ethical area. So the idea is that we have to serve our client ethically. And if we don't know the area, we don't service that area. Well, a military person that's relocating their family from one fort to another, they need to be within so many miles of their fort, but that could be a large area. So of course, knowing all those areas, I have to be members of boards in all those areas, members of all the super systems in all those areas, and the lockbox systems in all those areas, and the showing time systems and all that jazz, right? Again, trying to explain that for the consumer. Because I'm 2 hours from my home, I'm about 4 hours from this other agent's home, and I'm going to do a video walkthrough for somebody who's overseas in Kuwait or whatever. So I've got my gimbal and everything. I pull in, and this guy is with his clients. He's not clearly an agent, but he's an agent. He's walking around the house and they're trying peering the windows and stuff. I've got appointment set for 5 p.m. and it's like 4:45 or what? No, I'm sorry. It was like 5:15. I was like 15 minutes late to my own appointment, but it was 5 to 5:30. So I gave him 10 minutes or so. And at the last 5 minutes of my own set time, which the house was under contract already, but it wasn't showing in the system as under contract. The agent had literally called me on my way there to say, hey, we had a counter out. You just scheduled that showing. It's under contract now. So I was doing a video backup. Turns out this house didn't work for the client at all anyway. But just setting all that up to tell you, I come up, the agent is peering through the windows. I've got access to that lockbox, and apparently he does not. He's from 4 hours away. So when I walked up to the door after, again, 15 minute wait or so, I said, hey, are you an agent? He said, yeah, I am. I'm trying to get in this house, but the stupid, and he started blowing up about the association and how he pays his dues back home. And this is BS and blah, 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 throwing a fit, like screaming in front of his client, who's already mortified. So I shouldn't have been a jerk, but I kind of was. Because I'm a member of the association. I'm the president of the local board where I'm at. And then I'm a member of all of these boards so that I can access these things. It's like $15 extra or something. So spend the money and you can pop that little box open. He pissed me off. And so I acted with a pissed off attitude when I replied back, well, if you'll step to the side, I'm going to pop this box open and go inside the house. And when I popped the box open, I opened the door. He started to come in behind me and I opened the door. And that's when he blew up and started screaming about what a dog I was. And I'm not necessarily going to repeat all the things that he said, but realtors don't treat each other like this. And you're a piece of crap and blah, 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 and all sorts of curse words. I went
through
the house.
His clients were standing there?
Right there. And mortified the whole time. Mortified, right? So I go through the house and calm myself down. I'm a really big guy and I got raised by a really small guy with small guy syndrome. So he taught me to have a bad temper and I try to get over it as best I can. So I went through the house, calm myself down. Oh my goodness, I'm chill out. So then I go to go back out the door and he's still standing there and he's like screaming at me. And so I get past him, I get in the truck, I go to leave and I realize I have no clue who this guy is. I didn't take a picture of him, anything like that. And he's standing there at his client's window screaming at them about what a dog I am. So I go to leave the circle drive and I pull back into the end of the circle and I climb back out and decide I'm going to go up there and introduce myself and give him my business card and ask him who he is. And he ignores me. And I say, hey, you've got to at least look at me and take my business card and tell me what your name is, sir, because I need to speak to your broker. And he said, the person behind him, the other person in the car, screamed the name of his broker. It was a lady's name that I recognized from another association. I've met her in the state stuff. So I recognized the name of the lady. And I said, it's fine. He wouldn't take the card. So I dropped the card, went to my truck. You'd think the story's over. I went to my truck. I decided I'm going to go eat dinner. I'm not going to call his broker immediately. I'm going to go calm down. I'm going to call my broker, talk to Kim about it, and she calms me down. So I talked to her about it. About 5 minutes after I talked to her, I get a phone call from the area that this guy's from. And it's this guy. And he says, hey, I was calling to speak to you. You had an altercation with one of my agents a few minutes ago. I want to find out what happened. And I said, and your name is what? And he told me, and I said, so are you his broker? And he said, well, no, not yet, but I'm going to be next week. And I said, but he's your agent. He said, yeah, that's my agent. And I said, well, first of all, you need to talk to my broker. And if you're not a broker, you don't have any agents under you. I don't know what you're talking about, but you need to call different people, call your agent. I hang up the phone. And of course, Kim and I talked about it. And what we decided to do was to write a letter to their association with a brief explanation of the violent attitude of that agent and the way that he talked. And of course, what rings in my head, what he kept screaming is as I was locking that lockbox is that agents don't treat each other like this. And you're right, sir. Agents don't treat each other like you are treating me right now. And when I walked up to that door, if he'd have said, yeah, I'm an agent having trouble getting in, can you help? I'd have said, let's call the listing agent and make sure you're cool with that. And then did you know it's under contract already? Right? handle those things and I would help. I'm a realtor. I'm a fellow realtor. Your clients are right there. I'm going to help. I'm not going to ask you for a paycheck. I'm going to help. Anyway, so of course, that was the story, is that we should all treat each other better. And yeah, he's right. Realtors don't talk to each other like that.
And then he was going to jump offices. That's so fantastic that you're going to get away from your repercussions. But this is why real estate commissions tell us to carry our pocket cards. Because all he had to do was say, I'm a fellow licensed person. Here's my license number. Can you help me out? And you're 100% right. If he had been this much kind, you might have been able to help him. But he had to be unhinged.
It was coming out of my mouth that how can we can call the listing agent or whatever. And he interrupted me to start screaming about the association and how we don't do anything. And it's just money coming out of his pocket. And it's literally the opposite of what he's literally the extra couple bucks would have given him the access to look so smart, pop that box open. And of course, you can get reciprocal access for the year in that area for 50 bucks. So,
well, and you know, we talk about what the association provides. And so you've already mentioned it a couple of times, like the association's job is to be that community, to give people a resource to work together for the best benefit of buyers and sellers. And these poor buyers probably didn't know how to fire this guy when they saw him come unglued. So they probably felt trapped. He wasn't abiding by the rules. And to the general public, when realtors pay dues to be part of an organization, it's so that we do have guidance and we do have bylaws and regulations and ways to monitor behavior, but it's also so we can maintain access, because when he was trying to barrel into the house, Cricket, I mean, you're also protecting the person who owns the house who's not there, but we're in somebody else's property. And I think some agents forget that from time to time, that when they want to barrel in the door or they're looking in the windows, you don't live there, buddy. That's somebody else's private property. And if there's one thing realtors have to stay vigilant on, it's how we protect private property rights, which is not just what happens in DC, but it's how we interact with each other and how we interact with the person who owns the freaking house.
Very important. And that's one of the things that you stress in your podcast. And I love about your podcast. You're exactly right. Do you have time for the third story?
I'd say one more thing though. You know why he came unglued? Probably needed the cash.
Right. He had commission breath.
Yeah. He drove 4 hours away because he needed the cash. And I told y'all the stat already. If 70% of agents did between 0 and 1 transactions, this dude was starving. And so his clients need to know that's not acceptable behavior. So if you're watching or listening to this and you're feeling like you have an uncomfortable relationship with your realtor too, depending on what state you're in, you can reach out to the broker of your agent and find out if you can get reassigned to somebody else, because you don't deserve to be treated poorly, to hear any of this, and be subjected to a really unprofessional experience. And so I had to toss that in there. So tell us story number 3 as we wrap up here today.
Preach. And to follow up what you just said, again, the professional that's servicing you in any industry should be servicing you and focused on your needs, not their own needs. That's pretty obvious. So that third one, you mentioned how realtors do things to help their clients. I don't know if I helped my client or not in this story. We were listing a house. She had 7 acres. In Missouri, 7 acres can be 1 acre in a house, and then 6 acres way off down a hill. So this was 6 acres way off down a hill. It had a little gravel that went down to the bottom of it, right? I wasn't necessarily going to walk all 7 acres, but I do try and walk my properties anytime I list them. Obviously,
you could probably hang glide that one. Did you get a hang glider out and ride down on the wind?
It's getting back that's the problem. So she's listing the place, $80,000, $90,000 trailer, that type of thing. And I say, well, we need to fill out these seller's disclosures. And she says, what a lot of people in this area say, we have this weird thing where seller's disclosures are not required other than the federal stuff. So if you can't talk the sellers into it, sometimes they just say no. I generally talk my sellers into it. I feel like it's logical to give all the information. I give them stories like, if you were to buy a car, you'd want to know how old the tires are, blah, blah, blah. So of course, I always push the client and make sure that they're filling out that disclosure. So she said, well, I don't want to do the internet thing. And I said, that's fine. I'll fill it out right here. Let's fill it out and I'll fill this stuff in. You write the stuff in that you have to. We'll checkmark what we have to and you sign it off and we'll be good to go. And that's as close as I ever come to filling out somebody's seller's disclosure, right? I'll write things in with them, but I make them write the thing. I'll do the check marks, but it's going to be your handwriting, not mine. Mine's very evident. I'm very sloppy. Anyway, so seller's disclosure, the main legal things that you have to check mark, whether or not there's ever been meth made in the house that you're aware of. Yes or no? No. Okay. Whether or not there's any lead-based paint in this building. This is a newer trailer. It's 90-something. So no. And the building before this was built same time. Okay. So no, nothing built before 1978. Have you had any biohazards on the property? Almost check mark. No. And she said, what do you mean biohazard? What do you mean? What do I mean? She says, well, my ex-boyfriend put some cans of dioxin on the backside of the property and DNR came and encapsulated them. Is that what you're talking about? I said, I don't know what dioxin is, but let's look it up. Have you ever heard Times Beach? Yeah, dioxin is toxic. This is Agent Orange. I just listened to a podcast where you mentioned Agent Orange the other day. So here's your Agent Orange story. So, and I didn't know this necessarily, but I said, okay, show me what you're talking about, right? Show me. So we walk down this little gravel path all the way to the back, and there's these two huge 55-gallon encapsulated tubs. So it's a tub that's encapsulating a 55-gallon tank. And the tub says DNR, Missouri DNR, or no, it just said DNR. It said potential biohazardous material, I think was the words that it said. I've got pictures hiding in my phone somewhere of this, right? Because we're like 40 feet away and I'm like, cool, let's go back up top. So I put the whole listing on pause. She had signed the listing paperwork and everything. So I put everything on pause, right? And again, a lot of agents would just take the listing, not even go look, all that stuff. I happened to ask the questions.
Let's just slow this down.
The long and short of the story was that the dioxin was what was in the tubs. What it had, the craziest part of the story is that her ex-boyfriend was using that to strip paint off of something back when he was in, like in the 70s and stuff. We had this thing with Times Beach in Missouri where there was a whole bunch of dioxin that got distributed across Missouri. And again, this guy had a couple tubs of it that he was using for stuff. It's totally bad. So when she kicked him out, he turned her into the DNR for those tubs of dioxin on the back of the property. So DNR showed up and told her, well, we know what he's doing and we know that you didn't put this back there. So this is very expensive to get rid of. We don't have any way of disposing of it, but we can encapsulate it for you. We won't charge you for that. We'll pop these caps on it. But here's the name and number of a company in Canada that can incinerate it for you if you can ever figure out how to do that. We contacted the company. $35,000 in transport costs to have it transported up there. I did this whole research thing on Times Beach was actually an area where they had a dioxin like factory or something where they'd had to go through
really?
And dispose of a whole bunch of it. It was just south of St. Louis. And after the Depression, it got taken over by poorer people, right? And they were using like oil that was laced with this dioxin to spray down the road so that there wasn't as much dust. A whole bunch of people across Missouri died from it. And it ended up being this huge thing for a couple of years. And Times Beach got completely shut down. It's a whole thing. I'll send you a link.
Anyway. It's why it's healthy to have a certain level of skepticism about a lot of things in life, to ask great questions, because Agent Orange is a classic example. That dioxin was looked at as something helpful, turned out to have very negative unintended consequences, and subsequently became something that's a Superfund issue where Diener has to get involved. So keep a healthy level of skepticism, people, and read into that whatever you want to read into. But it's wise to ask questions and it's wise to deal with things that you find, because if Diener's involved, buyers need to know about it. And frankly, you should be careful who you date, because if you're dating somebody that's using Agent Orange to strip paint, you've chosen poorly, I think.
That's accurate. I think she admitted that. She was at a different point in her life.
Maybe they'll add that to some of these dating profiles. I've been married for so long that I don't know how things work, but I'm pretty sure it doesn't say in there, does he use dioxin to strip paint? I wouldn't pick that guy.
Definitely get to know people a little bit, I guess would be a good point there. Yeah. But as far as the real estate part goes, again, if I had an agent tell me one time, and I'm not picking on her because it's a busy market. It was a really, really busy market on the lakefront at that time. And they didn't have a seller's disclosure. And I think I was asking for one. And she's like, well, they're filling it out. But if you're making offers, they're due by, you know, noon or whatever. And I'm like, well, give me the disclosure. I want to tell them about the property. And this is the type of story that I share, that if you hadn't filled out a disclosure, you may not know that that septic tank's leaking into the lake or whatever the case is. People conveniently forget stuff until you start going through the motions.
But it's not just the motions, right? So you went through the form with her, and we see a lot of agents in a technology-driven world that send stuff electronically, and they're just sending it instead of saying, when you get it, let's go over it item by item, because you asking the question triggered the memory for her. If she was just going through by rote, check, 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 she might have just said, no problems, no problems, no problems. But you said biohazard, and that woke up her radar.
Yeah. And when somebody says, what do you mean by that? You ask them, what do you mean by what do I mean by that?
Yeah, let's have a conversation. All right. So Cricket, if anybody's looking for a professional realtor in the Lake of the Ozarks, they want somebody that's got information and will give them good, honest counsel. How can they reach you?
Oh, they can call or text anytime. My cell number is 417-718-8666. And since I'm a broker, I don't have to give you my broker phone number, but I will. It's 417-312-9378. Seems like the disclosure logical thing to do.
I don't know. There's a lot of sixes in your phone number, so maybe they should call that broker number instead.
Email me at cricket@ozarkempirerealty.com. And I'll tell you how to get one of these C2EX pins if you don't know what that is.
And if you are a consumer, that's commitment to excellence. If you're a realtor, you're going to have to look up C2EX. But to the public, you should know that indicates a realtor who says, yes, realtors subscribe to the code of ethics, but that's plus one. That's taking the education and the dedication to another level. So thank you for bringing that to light. And also talking about the military designation, it's good to have people thinking about what can take them next level. So Cricket, I appreciate your service to the local realtor community. I appreciate you coming on the show, and I appreciate you being dedicated to being a better version of realtor in your own community and beyond. It's much appreciated.
Beside myself to have been here. Thank you very much.
All right, guys, all of Cricket's contact information, handles, links, all that fun stuff in the show notes for this episode. So go click on it after you finish sweating to the oldies. Get connected, because we can all do really great things in real estate when we're never afraid to keep learning. And make sure you, of course, give 5 stars or review, share with a friend or colleague, because sharing is caring. And I will see you here next time. As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more crazy shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or frankly, you just need to one up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram at Lee Thomas Brown, or tweet me at Lee Brown, or frankly, any social network where you hang out, I'm there. And if you have some fun, then you totally want to subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.